know more about what matters in your life because you listen to the Pensacola Expert Panel with Jenna Barr. 9 till 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
The views and opinions expressed here on the Pensacola Expert Panel are not those necessarily of News Radio 92.3 1620, but those of Terrence A. Gross of Gross & Schuster, attorney at law.
Good morning. You're listening to the Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Joining me now on the phone is Terrence A. Gross. Good morning, Terry. How are you?
Good morning. Beautiful day. It's too bad we have to be at work, but such is the case.
But that's okay. You love what you do, and you do a great job.
Yeah, and one of the things that I used to do a lot of, but not so much anymore because the rules have changed, and that is actually go to trial. Back in the day when I was a young lawyer, jury trials were very frequent. In 1983, I actually picked 18 juries and went to trial on 15 of those cases. Now, probably only 1% of most personal injury cases end up in the courtroom. And I wanted to go over jury selection a little bit because a lot of our listeners, probably a handful have probably been subpoenaed before, have been called to court. Maybe they served, maybe they didn't. And I wanted to take a little bit of the mystery out of that whole process. First of all, they used to subpoena you from the voting records, and now I think it's the driver's license. So it's a little bit more expanded. But what they do, and because of COVID, we changed a little bit in Escambia County. So right now, it's a temporary thing. But right now, if you are subpoenaed for a Monday morning in Escambia County, Florida, I can assure you that you are going to be considered for a criminal jury trial. For someone that's charged with a crime, that's what they're doing. If you're subpoenaed for a Tuesday morning, then those cases are going to be juries for civil cases, like for personal injury or money damages. It could be a condominium dispute. It could be anything. It could be a hurricane claim, for all we know. But anyway, so what they normally do, let's say a Monday morning, there's always going to be more criminal jury trials than civil. There's a lot of crime. And sometimes there's just no plea bargain offered. I mean, a lot of these guys, you always hear it. You go, why are they going to trial? Because they're offering some dude life in prison. These figure, hey, I might as well give it a try. Maybe I'll get the right jury like OJ did, and maybe I'll get off. So I'm going to go ahead and roll the dice because I got nothing to lose if they're going to try to put me away for life. So you see a lot of that. But at the end of the day, let's say on a Monday morning, they may subpoena 200, they may subpoena 250, a lot of people. And you're brought into this room, and even in this COVID environment, you're sitting pretty much butt cheek to butt cheek because, I mean, that's a lot of people to put in a given room. Now, what you don't know is that when you're put in that room, you're already assigned some number arbitrarily. And so where you're sitting means something to the bailiff. So when Judge Smith is ready and he goes, bring me what they call a venire, V-E-N-I-R-E, bring me some potential jurors. So ordinarily in most cases, whether it's criminal or civil, most state court cases are six-person juries with one alternate. Now, if you got first-degree murder, of course it'd be 12, but ordinarily, if you're charged with grand theft or petty theft or DUI or whatever it may be, it'd be a six-person jury, and the same thing for a car wreck personal injury case. So to get six, normally most judges like to start with 30 people. Why? And I'll tell you why. So let's say you're one of the 30 people and you're brought into another courtroom, a much smaller courtroom. You'll see the judge there. You'll see a court reporter there and a clerk there and some lawyers, and you're just trying to figure out what's going on. And they usually will sit you in five rows of six. first row, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth. Now, how where you're sitting, again, was preordained probably by a gumball machine or the bailiff. I mean, it's just an arbitrary process. There's no science. It's just luck of the draw. But I will tell you that that first row, that first six people sitting there on the front row, that's what we call the presumptive jury. That would be the jury to hear the case by blind luck if none of the parties or the judge strikes anybody. But normally, through jury selection, people get struck. And how do they get struck? The judge will do some opening questions. And one of the questions most judges will ask, is there anybody out there that for whatever reasons just feels that they can't give this case their full attention? This case is going to be start today. It may not end until Thursday. Is there anybody out there? All of a sudden somebody raises their hand. Well, my dad's on his deathbed. Well, of course the judge is going to let you go. The next guy raises his hand. My wife is very, very ill, and there's no one to take care of her at home. The judge is going to let that. I work at a two-person retail store. The other employee is out sick. Well, the judge will probably excuse you there. So whatever excuses it may be, the judge has the latitude on his own or her own to say, yes, you're excused. So as people are excused, that presumptive first row, now you're into the second row. So I can pretty much tell you if there's only one jury trial being picked, if there's just one personal injury case and I'm in the courtroom, I already know that the odds of anybody on that back row being on the jury are slim to none, even the fifth row, because you're just not going to get that far. Now, another thing about jury selection you got to know is each side, each lawyer, the insurance company's lawyer, and then I'm the plaintiff's lawyer because I represent injured people, we each get what's called three peremptory challenges. And a peremptory challenge means I can strike somebody just because I got a bad vibe, bad gut. Now, as an experienced lawyer, I learned long ago to watch the jury very intently, to never, ever take my eyes off the jury during jury selection. A young lawyer, let me tell you what a young lawyer would do. A young lawyer, of course, they're nervous. They're going to have their little notepad out there, and they start asking a bunch of questions of the potential jury. And if someone says something, yes, I was in a car wreck 3 years ago, what does the young lawyer do? He has his little form, and he writes that down. That's an important thing, right? Well, when he writes that down, is he looking at the jury? You can't write and look at the same time. And he may miss some other juror rolling their eyes or doing something else. And so what experienced trial lawyers like myself get good at, we get good at what we call nonverbal communication. So, for instance, I'm picking a jury. And juror number nine, you know, I'm just catching out the corner of my eye. I'm only up there. You're picking a jury doesn't take forever. So in my first 40 minutes, I'm up there trying to ask questions and whatever and relate to the jury. And all of a sudden, I noticed in that 40 minutes, that guy looked at his watch three times. That tells me something. It tells me that he's got something on his mind. He really doesn't want to be here. He's really conscious about time. He wants to be somewhere. This is taking too long. I want people to be interested in sitting on the jury, to be attuned to what's going on, to be concentrating, not to be looking at their watch. So I may just strike that person just for that reason, just for that arbitrary reason. Or somebody may roll their eyes. So one person gives an answer, you know, and then the person next to them rolls their eyes, and I got to figure out what does that mean. Does he think that answer is stupid, or you know? So you're just trying to figure this out. And there are big trials. I mean, the real, you know, monster trials where some lawyer's suing for millions and millions and millions of dollars. And a lot of times, what they do, since it's high stakes poker, they will actually retain a psychologist, a person that is an expert in reading body language and so forth, and have them there just for that kind of input. Now, most of our cases aren't worth millions and millions and millions, and so a lawyer like myself just has to go on their sixth sense, and I've been doing this for 42 years. Of course, you develop a sixth sense. But anyway, so there's things like that so that go on. The other thing, there's also unlimited. Each side gets three for cost. So, for instance, let's pretend I'm picking a jury, and I start asking about pain and suffering damages, and some guy, and his name is Archie Bunker. So Archie Bunker raises his hand, and he goes, "Bah, humbug, life's not a bowl of cherries. You know, I was in Korea, and I got pain. So what? So what, you got injured and you hurt? I don't think you should get money for that." And that's Archie Bunker. Well, of course, I'm going to strike that guy. If the judge doesn't strike him, then I'm going to use one of my peremptories. I don't want him on my jury. But meanwhile, the person next to them says, "No, I disagree. My husband had a car wreck 3 years ago. His life has never been the same. He can't do this. He can't do that." Well, the insurance company's not going to leave that person on the jury because of that experience, thinking that she'll be thinking about her husband when they go to deliberate. So the obvious bad apples sort of get eliminated. But then the judge could also strike people for cause. So going back to Archie Bunker, that was pretty extreme what I just said. Probably the judge would strike it. The judge would say, "I don't think this Archie guy can be fair. He sounds like he's not going to follow the law. I, the court, am going to strike that person." And so invariably, depending on the jury and the jury selection, a lot of times we do end up in that third or fourth row because, again, there's six. So as we strike one person, the next person is there. Now, the jurors don't really know this. They're not knowing, but the lawyers know it, and the judge knows it. And you go down the line. And then we get into a baseball scenario. Now, what the heck does baseball have to do with jury selection? You got an idea? You got a guess?
No, I couldn't even guess if I wanted to about baseball. Well, so you got to tell me now.
Okay. Well, I just watched the World Series last night, and I'm a big Atlanta Braves fan. They won, so I'm very happy about that.
Yes, congratulations.
Yes, that was fun. Yes. But anyway, in baseball, we all know three strikes and you're out. So let's pretend I got my little chart, and I've been asking all these questions. And I've already used two of my strikes. I've already gotten rid of two people that just didn't like. Now I can see there's juror number 10. Juror number 10, I'm not really wild about juror number 10. I don't hate juror number 10, but something about my vibe, I'm just not loving juror number 10. But I know this, if I strike juror number 10, if I use my third strike, that means I got no more strikes, and then we get to juror number 11, and meanwhile, I hate juror number 12. So if I'm thinking, if I get rid of 10 and we move to 11, what if the insurance company's lawyer strikes one more person, and now he's got 12, and 12 could end up being Darth Vader for me? So a lot of times I have to stop at two strikes and not use all three. It's sort of gamesmanship. You're trying to figure this out because the insurance company's lawyer, they want people on a jury that would be sympathetic to a defendant. And as a plaintiff, we want people that would be sympathetic to the plaintiff. And really what really happens is if you got good lawyers on both sides, the obvious people are struck. You know, the lady whose husband just had the car wreck 3 years ago that totally would sympathize with me, no way in heck that insurance company's leaving that lady on the jury. She's gone. Meanwhile, we know one way or another, Archie Bunker is not going to be on the jury. And a lot of times you end up with six people that are what I call vanilla, probably people that didn't talk too much, people that don't seem to have a strong opinion either way, so they're not really alienating either side, and the lawyers just say, okay, I'll go with them. And you really don't know much about them because the people that do a lot of talking, if you get a real big talker, usually one of the lawyers is not going to like that. So they're going to say something that one of the lawyers is just going to feel a little angst about. So it's an interesting process. But a lot of times, you know, the people in the back rows are chiming in, and, you know, I engage them, I talk to them, but I know there's no way of getting to the back row because you're not going to go with three peremptory challenge seats. That's only six, and the judges kind of, you know, do whatever for cause. Some days it's three, some days it's more. It's crazy. I can tell you, back in the day when I was a young lawyer, I did a lot of DUI work. I defended drunken drivers back in the early 80s when I was a young lawyer. I don't do that anymore. Haven't done that in a long time. In fact, I actually prosecute drunken drivers. Now, I'm a civil prosecutor. The young prosecutor does the criminal charges, and I prosecute them civilly for causing injury to my clients. But back then, I defended them, and I could do a jury selection on a Monday. I'd go for one Monday, and it'd be a real quiet jury, and I'd go, how many of you don't drink? And only three people would raise their hand out of 30. That means there's 27 drinkers there, and maybe sometime in their life they maybe crossed that line. And so maybe they would just subconsciously, you know, I might say give me a mulligan, but that's a better scenario. The next Monday, I'm in the same exact courtroom, total different 30 people, and I ask them the basic question, how many of you don't drink? And all of a sudden, 18 say they don't drink. If 18 say they don't drink, that could be tough sledding for a DUI defense lawyer. I mean, then, so it just the arbitrariness of it. So some scenarios when you're in there, and maybe it just takes one person, because you can get one Archie Bunker who is just very boisterous and talkative that may get everybody else talking, because most people feel uncomfortable. If you're one of the potential jurors, you're in a situation that maybe you've never been. You're a little nervous yourself. You're sitting there. You got the court looking at you. There's a sheriff's deputy looking at you. You got the lawyers asking questions. And maybe you're reticent or slow to speak up. And a good lawyer tries to engage these people to get them to speak up so that you can learn a little bit more. But sometimes you just need somebody to break the ice. And every now and then you'll get this one juror that's just chatty, 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 and they get talking. And then what a good lawyer would do is, how many of you disagree with what Mr. Smith just said? And maybe a few hands go up. So even though they didn't talk, if they agree with what he's just said, you've gotten some information that way. And then I'll conversely ask the next question, how many of you disagree with what Mr. Smith just said? And a few more hands go up. So even though they weren't really talking much, I've used that information from the chatty juror just to get a read. Because you got to just, it's a very limited time. Most jury selections total, the total jury selection is from 1 to 2 hours. The 2 hours, unless it's, you know, a first-degree murder case, and then it could be weeks. But I'm just talking about a garden variety personal injury case or a garden variety criminal case, your average jury selection takes 1 to 2 hours. And so the plaintiff's lawyer gets up first on an injury case, and he asks questions. Then the defense lawyer asks questions. And then every now and then, if it seems real personal, they may actually call a juror up to the court to be interviewed in front of the judge quietly with the court reporter, where the other jurors can hear him. So if someone, you know, if you ask a question, how many of you ever have lost a loved one in a car wreck? Well, you don't want to go airing all that in front of 30 strangers. I mean, that would be pretty tactless. So you usually say, I'll come back to you in a little bit. And then as it progresses, maybe you get the person up there and they'll have to describe, and you're trying to figure out what did this do to the person. The fact that they lost someone in a car wreck, what scars do that leave, and how will that affect them in this jury trial? And you're trying to figure that out in a very quick manner. So there's a real art to it. And I think that's where the more experienced lawyers have an advantage. Because I think they're watching more and really thinking, what am I trying to accomplish? What am I doing? And I'll give you some examples. How much time do we have in the show? How much time do we still have?
We've got about 3 minutes.
Perfect. Well, let's just say this. Let's pretend I am representing a triathlete who got injured in a car wreck and they can no longer run anymore. They can't compete the way they did. They're still thin, but they've probably gained 10 pounds. Of course, 10 pounds to triathlete, whether you're a woman or a male, you know, you don't like, you know, whatever. So if I go to pick a jury, do I really want to have a couch potato on that jury? Someone that is going to say, so what? I mean, you're still thin as a rail, and so you can't run around in circles or ride a bike. I mean, come on, grow up. I mean, what's the big deal? So a lot of times you're trying to cater your jury to who your person is. Meanwhile, if I'm representing a pretty big obese person, I may not want a triathlete on the jury. I don't want someone that's going to be thinking ill of my person because maybe they're carrying too much weight. They didn't choose to be in a car wreck. So you really are trying to get a jury of your peers. You're trying to get people that will sympathize with your case. But the insurance company is doing the same thing. So it's not like the plaintiff's lawyer has all the leverage or whatever, because a very competent insurance defense lawyer is going to be doing exactly the same thing. They're hoping to get people on the jury that maybe own businesses that may have been sued before, that maybe have had claims made against them, and so forth. I mean, there's books out there. There's books on jury selection, and they tell plaintiff's lawyers, don't pick accountants because they're bean counters. Don't pick CEOs of corporations because they're used to being sued all the time and don't like lawyers and don't like being sued. So it's fascinating. It's a process, but it's a lot more to it than meets the eye. So, folks, I know we're getting close to the end of the show. This is Terrence Gross. I'm a local personal injury lawyer. I just celebrated 42 years of practicing law in Florida, primarily the Panhandle, with the principal office here on Sabanis and Palafox Street. We have 5 offices throughout the Panhandle. We have one in Milton, one in Crestview, one in Fort Walton, and one in Navarre. I am blessed to have 2 sons and a son-in-law in with me, Rhett Gross, Tyler Gross, and Dalton Allen. And all we do is represent people that are injured in a car wreck. We don't represent corporations. We don't represent defendants. We don't represent insurance companies. We represent the people, obviously, on a contingency fee basis. We're local. We know the area. And if you need to call us, it's 850-434-3333. Or you can visit us on the web at grossandschuster.com. If you went to our website, you would see it's informational. It's a lot of the stuff we've talked about on past shows about no fault, about uninsured motorists, about all these things I talk about. We don't brag about verdicts, but I figure we're out of time. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you again. That's Terrence A. Gross with Gross and Schuster. Go online, check them out, grossandschuster.com. Thanks for spending your Wednesday morning with me. Join me again tomorrow morning here on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Have a great day.
News, talk, traffic, and weather. News Radio 92.3 AM 1620, WNRP, Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.